You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Christine Buckley, and this is Field Talk, a podcast in which we explore the work of authors whose papers have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Geraldo Vasconcelos, a professor of ecology and conservation at the Federal University of Uberlândia in Brazil. His work in the September issue of Ecology looks at the classic mutualism between ants and plants in the tropics and explores what happens to some of these plants when their ant mutualists are not around. Dr. Vasconcelos, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Christine.
First, can you explain to us what an ant-plant mutualism is?
An ant-plant mutualism is basically a biological interaction between a species of ants and a species of plants, and which is beneficial to both partners. The benefits that ants get from this association include dispersal, defense, and nutrition. Dispersal occurs when, for instance, an ant moves the seeds from a plant to a site where the seed has higher chances of germinating and become an adult. Defense occurs when, many ants are good predators of other insects. So the presence of ants on the plant foliage helps to protect those plants from the attack of herbivores. And finally, nutrition occurs more often on plants which live on the trunks of trees, which we call as epiphytes. And some ants nest on those epiphytes, and they deposit their ant refuses near the roots of those plants, and the plants absorb the nutrients from those refuses. And the benefits derived by ants include mostly nutrition in the form, mainly in the form of nectar producing in structures we call extrafloral nectaries. But there are some plants which the scientists call myrmecophytes or ant plants. And those plants have structures that are built only to house ants. We call those structures as domatia, and they include, for instance, hollow stems, hollow spines, and leaf pouches, which is the case for the plants I currently study.
It seems as though a lot of these ant-plant mutualisms occur in the tropics. Is there something about the environment where they live that makes it more likely for a mutualism to occur?
Oh, yes. In the tropics, ants can get around all year long, and they are very abundant on the tropical vegetation. Mutualism starts with a kind of intimate contact. So because ants are so abundant in tropical forests, and they are active all year round, this is a kind of a pre-adaptation so that mutualisms can evolve. And that's why they are much more abundant in the tropics than outside the tropics.
And in your study, you were looking at the fact that some areas with plants that usually have mutualist ants don't actually have these mutualist ants.
Mutualist ants, we knew that they often don't occur at high altitude, and this is probably because it's too cold there for ants to survive. And mutualist ants are also absent from remote islands, and this is probably because they simply can't get in there. And my study is the first to document the presence of ant-plant populations without their mutualist ants in mainland low elevation sites. Individual plants without ants is common, but this is the first time that we found whole populations without an ant. I work with Tococca guineensis, which is basically the reason I choose to work with it is because it is one of the very few species of ant plants to occur in central Brazil where I work. Most ant plants occur in the forest of the Amazon or Central America. They are very abundant and diverse there. Just a few get into this in central Brazil where the biome is mostly a savanna. Tococca doesn't have a common name in Brazil, but I read that in Iquitos, Peru, they call Tococca guineensis and some other melastome ant plants as an Ayo caspi, which can be translated into plants of stinging ants, which makes sense. And another interesting thing that I had is that some tribes of Indians make a tea using the leaves and the domatia, the leaf pouches of Tococca, and give this tea to pregnant women. So they will give birth to a boy. So it's a way to choose the sex of the child. So this is very interesting.
Wow. Do we know if that actually works?
I never tried. Well, my wife never tried. And we have a boy and a girl.
I see.
So we start with the inventory of the plants and their associated ants. Every time we found a population of plants, we surveyed that population, determined the size of the plants, the ants that were there or not, and so on. And this way, we found that some of the populations didn't have mutualistic ants that would provide protection against herbivores. So once we discovered that some populations didn't have these mutualistic ants, we thought that they might be investing in alternative defenses. So we measured leaf toughness and the density of trichomes. Trichomes are at the pubescence of the leaf. And the insects, especially insect larvae, cannot get access into the leaf. And so it's a kind of morphological defense.
Also, you measured leaf toughness. How do you measure leaf toughness?
Yeah, there is a device which we call penetrometer, and it measures the amount of force that is necessary to punch a hole across the leaf.
And you hypothesize that the plants that don't have ants on them would probably have tougher leaves because they're investing more in that defense because they don't have the ants to defend them?
Yes. Our hypothesis is that plants would have to compensate somehow for the loss of the ants.
And finally, you did these exclusion experiments where you just took all of the ants off of some plants and then waited to see how well they would do. How did you manage to get all of the ants off of these plants?
Well, we start using insecticides, which we apply inside the pouches, the leaf pouch. But that didn't work. The insecticide, although it was very dilute, it had some kind of phytotoxic activity. So the plants start to abort the leaves. So
it didn't
work this way. So we chose to exclude ants with water. Simply with water. So we put water in a syringe and apply inside the pouches so the ants either kill or had to come out. And then we took the additional ants with forceps and an aspirator.
An aspirator is something that you use to just suck the ants off of the plant with your own mouth, right?
Yes, yes.
Do you ever accidentally suck an ant up and it goes through the aspirator and gets onto your lip?
Yeah, that happens sometimes. So fast that you just swallow it.
So how many ants do you think you swallowed in the course of your field work for this paper?
Oh, quite a few. Not many. It's not that common, but it happens sometimes.
In the final part of your study, you showed that these plants that don't have ants on them have probably been without these ants for at least 15 years. How did you figure that out?
What we did is we have a herbarium here at the university. And in this herbarium, we have several specimens of tococca collect at this exactly the same size we studied. And when you place a plant voucher in the herbarium and you press the leaves of the plants, so you also keep the ants in the plants. And those that we looked were collected in the early 90s in the same place. And those specimens from the early 90s didn't have any mutualistic ants. So for at least 15 years, this plant population is there and is without mutualistic ants.
How are these plants that don't have ants surviving?
The plant is able to produce other types of defenses when ants are not present, especially trichomes that we found that once you remove the ants, then the plants start to producing more trichomes because they lost the ants.
Are these other induced defenses enough to protect the plant as much as the ants would?
Well, it's not enough, because if we compare the level of damage of plants with ants and those that are without ants but are producing more trichomes, those without ants still have more damage, but it's not a level of damage so high that will jeopardize the chances of the plant surviving and reproducing. So despite they have more damage, they still can be there, and they still can produce flowers and fruits.
So what is the your favorite part of your research job?
Well, my favorite part was to work at the Emmaus National Park. The Emmaus National Park is the largest reserve of Cerrado, North America. It has over 100,000 hectares of area, and it's plenty of wildlife. To get an idea of how huge this park is, we had to drive for nearly 40 kilometers to get into the administration office and the lodges. And we have to drive another several kilometers to get into our field site. It was very pleasant to work in this place. It's really beautiful and huge.
That was Dr. Geraldo Vasconcelos of the Federal University of Uberlândia in Brazil. I'm Christine Buckley. Thanks for listening to Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.